Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. A Harvard mathematician and a Boston attorney have won genius grants from the MacArthur Foundation.
Jacob Lurie and Mary Bonato are among 21 MacArthur Fellows selected for showing, quote, extraordinary originality and dedication in their creative pursuits and a marked capacity for self-direction. Each will receive $625,000 over the next 5 years, no strings attached.
Mary Bonato has been a pivotal leader in the push for same-sex marriage, starting in Vermont, which became the first state to grant civil unions for same-sex couples in 2000.
She successfully argued the Goodridge case before the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, making Massachusetts the first state to legalize same-sex marriage. And she was instrumental in last year's Supreme Court ruling that struck down key parts of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act.
Mary Bonato joins us now from the great state of Maine. And Mary Bonato, welcome to Radio Boston, and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So how did you get this great news, and what's your reaction to it?
Well, I received a phone call, and first I didn't even understand. And then when I understood, I thought it was a joke. And then when I realized it was for real, I couldn't really say very much because I was just shocked. So it's been taking a while to settle in.
It sounds like you were really surprised.
Yeah, I mean, shocked is really putting it extremely mildly. But, you know, here's the thing. I appreciate it, and I really have decided to view it as recognition of really the work of this justice-seeking movement and what can happen when people work together toward common goals.
Well, let me ask you about that work and the future of the work. You've been one of the leading forces, of course, in the push for marriage equality. It was your case that led to the Massachusetts SJC's historic decision in 2003 extending marriage rights to same-sex couples. You were involved in the successful challenge of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. And now, as we look across this country, 19 states and the District of Columbia have legal same-sex marriage. The progress has been breathtaking in just a few years. What accounts for that?
You know, history will tell us the full answer, but I see this as the work of millions, people whose names are known and unknown both, because obviously gay people are in families all across the nation, Republicans and Democrats, North and South, every demographic. So then, you know, Massachusetts really broke an historic barrier and said we're not going to have second-class citizens when it comes to marriage and included same-sex couples in marriage. And I think for the nation to see the love and the commitment and the joy when people can stand up and make that pledge to one another has been transformative. Seeing it has really changed everything.
So where's the next challenge in your push for marriage equality? What keeps you busy? What keeps you up at night thinking about what still needs to be done?
It's obviously great that we have 20 jurisdictions in the nation respecting same-sex couples' ability to marry, but that means there's many more where we don't have that freedom and protection. And real families are hurting every single day. People are ill, people are dying, and they are dying without being able to make this commitment to the person they've loved. It is urgent to get this issue resolved nationally, and I hope that we are at a point where the Supreme Court, as the final arbiter in our federal system, can make a ruling that assures the freedom to marry across our nation.
So what's the timeline? What's your best guess when this is no longer an issue in all 50 states?
My hope is that this issue will be resolved in relatively short order, although never soon enough. And what I mean by that is I am hopeful that the Supreme Court will take up a challenge in its current term and resolve the issue by June of next year. It's possible that would extend into the following year instead. I believe we're absolutely right on the law that the government cannot exclude only same-sex couples from marrying.
Mm. Now, not to be crass, but I do want to ask you about the grant. $625,000 over 5 years, no strings attached. You can do whatever you'd like with it. Do you have a plan for what you're going to do with this money?
I have zero plan. I have given it almost no thought because I am very busy working. And I look forward to thinking about it at some point in the future. But certainly it's very generous. Nothing like this has ever happened. I don't ever expect it to happen again.
You can do whatever you want with it, Mary. You can buy a boat. I mean, anything you want.
Like I said, I'm keeping my day job. I fully intend to stay committed to this work.
All right. Well, that's Mary Bonato. She's director of the Civil Rights Project with gay and lesbian advocates and defenders in Boston. And she's a recipient of one of this year's MacArthur Foundation grants, a so-called Genius Award. Mary Bonato, many thanks. And again, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And you can hear a profile of Mary Bonato and a timeline of key events in her fight for marriage equality at our website, radioboston.org.
New England has elected several high-profile female politicians in the past couple election cycles. In 2008, New Hampshire sent Senator Jean Shaheen to Washington and put Governor Maggie Hassan in the State House in 2012. Of course, that same year, Massachusetts elected Senator Elizabeth Warren. And now Attorney General Martha Coakley is making her bid for the governor's office.
Each of those women received high-profile endorsements and support from Emily's List, a major political action committee whose mission is to elect pro-choice Democratic women to office. The group has been called one of the Democratic Party's biggest power brokers for nearly 30 years.
But in those 30 years, regardless of party, Congress remains less than 20% female. There are just 5 female governors today. And of course, we've yet to see a woman win the White House. So joining us now to talk about gender, politics, and money is Stephanie Shriok. She's national president of Emily's List and is in Boston today. Stephanie Shriok, welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So there are a lot of women running in this election cycle, but I just wanted to start with the facts that we just presented to listeners. Congress is still less than 20% female. 18.9 is the last number I saw. What do you think some of the major challenges are for female candidates who are running in this election cycle?
Well, it starts with, so many women don't think they should be running. And so the work that we do at Emily's List is really to encourage, inspire, and then ultimately recruit Democratic women to step up and run. And over nearly 30 years, Emily's List has had great success. You talked about the 18 to 19% women in Congress, but when you look at the Democratic caucuses in Congress, we're close to 30% women in those two caucuses. Much of the work that's been done has been on the Democratic side by Emily's List.
So, I mean, we can talk about women in general in politics, but we can also talk party specific. I'm wondering if we can... If I could just ask you about the specificity of Emily's List's mission in general, because it is specific. It's pro-choice Democratic women. Is that focus too narrow today?
No, we don't think so at all. I mean, the Democratic Party is clearly a pro-choice party, and the Republican Party has continued to move further and further to the right. I mean, even so much as having, debates about access to birth control in the last few years, which I'm still stunned about. And for us, we still believe that our best opportunity is to focus in the Democratic Party and find women in the Democratic Party, because truthfully, we believe the Democrats are the party where they provide opportunities for women, not just women candidates, but American women to succeed and have a fair shot.
Right. And here's why I ask that question, because, many people have said that Emily's List is a big power broker because of your fundraising base, the sheer amount of money you're able to raise, the effects of your endorsement, your ground campaigns when you choose to launch them, et cetera. So I'm wondering, are we in a world now where is that influence or power best launched in support of women candidates, female candidates, or candidates who are supportive of women's issues?
Well, until we have a Congress that has an equal number of women and men sitting at our decision-making tables, until we have a country where 24 states elect their first women governors, 24 states in the United States have not elected women governors ever from either party. Not just Democrats, either party. We have a long way to go. I mean, we still live in a country that worldwide is, depending on what you look at, 77th in the percentage of women in elected office. So, one, we don't have enough women running on either side of the aisle. Emily's List works every day to continue to inspire and recruit women to run on the Democratic side. But if you look at all of the campaigns, and we have a great success story here in Massachusetts right now, but we don't have women running in every single race.
Mm-hmm.
But there are men running in every single race. So we have a lot of work to do still to inspire more and more women to take up the mantle, the challenge to run for office.
Now, when you say great success in Massachusetts, were you pointing to Senator Elizabeth Warren or other candidates? I mean, because Martha Coakley is running as governor now, but she did run for the Senate seat and lost that.
That's true. But I was really thinking about the ticket that is up for the Democrats here in Massachusetts this November, with Martha Coakley leading the way as the gubernatorial candidate coming through the primary. You also have Maura Healey, who's running as attorney general, again coming through a competitive primary. Deb Goldberg coming through another competitive primary. You know, in a state that, you know, historically for a long time didn't have a lot of women running, and definitely not a lot of women winning. Until you think about Nikki Tsongas,
right,
one of our first success stories here in Massachusetts, and that momentum for women's leadership has really been building since that Nikki Tsongas win.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about Senator Warren and Emily's List's support of her during her campaign, because she still remains one of Emily's List's biggest supporters, right? I mean, she's going to be at, I believe, a conference, an East Coast conference on Monday. She's going to stand right next to you and talk about women in government. But, you know, her name is often evoked amongst progressive circles at large. And you know where this is going, because recently there was a bit of a kerfuffle from groups saying that Emily's List maybe doesn't support the what they call the Elizabeth Warren wing of American politics, that they want you to expand your focus more to progressivism overall, which would capture those pro-choice Democratic women, rather than, again, keeping that narrow focus on what I've seen some people call the 1% of female candidates.
Well, that's interesting. I always laugh when they say the Elizabeth, you know, Warren wing. I'm like, but we recruited Elizabeth Warren to run. And by the way, if you look at 2012, it was Elizabeth Warren, Tammy Baldwin, big success story in Wisconsin, the United States Senator, now first openly gay member of the United States Senate, couldn't be proud of our support. Mazie Hirono, another victory we had last year in the United States Senate in Hawaii. The one thing I point people to, and I think this is really important here, we did some analysis not too long ago, at the impact that our Democratic women in whole are making in Congress. And if you check out our website, emilyslist.org, you can, one, see all of our great candidates for 14, but you can also look at this this impact study, as we call it, and it shows that Democratic women on average vote more progressively than their Democratic male counterparts across the board, not just on reproductive issues, but on the economy, on human rights and civil rights and education and workers' rights. We really do believe, as we get more and more women into governments, whether it's Congress or legislatures or leaders like governor, that we're bringing a broader sense of progressive issues. Are they all exactly progressive as defined by a few? Maybe not. But as a whole, women have really changed the debates, and they've made the debates more progressive.
Yeah. I want to talk for a minute about Emily's List as a major force in Democratic politics, mm-hmm. because as we said earlier, it's been called one of the biggest power brokers for the Democratic Party over the course of the past 30 years, and that's largely because of what we were talking about earlier, the group's fundraising prowess and the ability to launch sort of on-the-ground campaigns. I mean, so let's talk about money. I've been seeing that at this point in the election cycle, back in 2010, Emily's List has raised about $18.1 million. This is according to the Washington Post. That number has grown substantially in this election cycle we're in right now, $30 million. So first of all, what is that big bump in fundraising telling you?
Well, and it's been a trajectory since 10. We had a huge boost in 2012. We will have a higher fundraising goal, and we will hit it here in 14. There's a couple reasons. One, we have a growing number of incredibly talented candidates to rally around. You know, which, you know, this year are women like Allison Lenarkin Grimes running against Mitch McConnell in Kentucky, or Michelle Nunn running in Georgia. You know, Jean Shaheen running for re-election against Massachusetts former Senator Scott Brown, who we just seem to be running against on a regular basis. But it really is so much about those women, those candidates. The other thing that's also going on is there's a real energy for women's leadership. We're seeing it around the country. We're seeing it not just in the women stepping up, but in the members engaging. So not only is the fundraising going up, but we have had massive increase in our membership. Mm-hmm. We're now 3 million strong. And then we have a Republican Party that keeps moving to the right and attacking women's issues from equal pay, minimum wage, and, of course, access to health care.
Yeah. But on the other hand, and I think this is especially true in Massachusetts, there is substantial skepticism about the role that money overall plays in politics. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, while being a great fan of Emily's List, also signed the so-called People's Pledge when she ran in 2012, and that was to keep outside money outside of the race in the form of political ads, etc. And Martha Coakley's calling for the same People's Pledge in this year's gubernatorial race. So it seems to me, I'm just curious about what your response is to that, because it seems to me that even your most, say, textbook Massachusetts Democrat is growing pretty disillusioned with the distorting influence money does play in politics. They're saying groups like Emily's List stay out of it.
Well, on the independent side, and I want to take just a moment to remind everybody about Emily's List. The reason we started 29 years ago is that women had a terrible time getting access to any resources to their campaign. So much of the work Emily's List does is actually not independent expenditures and television ads, though we do those, but it's actually going to our millions of members across the country and saying, invest, make a personal contribution directly to that candidate. You know, and Emily's List, as a membership organization, raised over $1.2 million directly to Elizabeth Warren's campaign. That's really the core of who we are and what we do in $50 and $100 contributions. And that's what we're doing for Martha Coakley and Jean Shaheen and Gina Raimondo in Rhode Island. And that's a lot of it. Now, as regard to the independent expenditure work that we do, in fact, do in places where it's open to, you know, we understand the candidates come first and what they want, and the rules that apply under those circumstances are ones we'll follow. And we were thrilled Elizabeth Warren decided to do what she's doing. And clearly Charlie Baker in Massachusetts isn't going to take the same pledge.
Well, as so far at least. Stephanie Shirock is president of Emily's List. She's been holding that position since 2010. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Stay with us. Coming up, Malcolm Rogers, the longest-serving director of the Museum of Fine Arts Boston, joins us to talk about the future of the MFA, his decision to step down, and to take your questions. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.